on April 27th. And this is a workshop for a manager update. And of the city and borough of Wrangell, Alaska, Kim, could I please ask you to call the roll?
Sure. Assembly members Gilbert?
Here.
DeLong?
Here.
DeLong, are you there?
Yes, yeah, sorry, dog. Here.
Okay, Decker?
Here.
Larrabee?
Here.
Howell?
Here.
Morrison?
Here.
And Mayor Pasanka?
And I'm here as well. And at this point, is there any conflict of interest? And I'll pass the gavel right away over to Vice Mayor Gilbert. Vice Mayor Gilbert, my son has a fishing vessel, utilizes the ports and harbors extensively, and we are minority shareholders in his company.
I find you have no conflict of interest.
Thank you. Anyone else? Assemblymember Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Our family has a commercial fishing vessel and business, and my two children that live in the household also fish on other boats. And then secondly, I also work for a nonprofit called the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. That's a statewide group that represents the seafood industry broadly.
Okay, thank you. I don't see a conflict there. Assemblymember DeLong.
My household income relies heavily on the commercial fishing industry, so just want to declare that.
Thank you. And I don't see a direct link there for economic advantages, any, as long as the assembly is in agreement with both of those. Okay, thank you. And with that, City Manager Bob Bargan, you want to take it away, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate it. So a lot has happened since Thursday. The governor came out with Mandate 16, which is the beginning of the reopen Alaska Responsibly Plan, followed by Mandate 17, which is the independent commercial fishing vessel mandate. So there's a lot of many folks across the state, many businesses trying to wrap their heads around all of the new rules and regulations associated with doing business in Alaska. And there have been, as we heard at our EOC briefing this morning, some discrepancies or some inconsistencies between previous mandates and current mandates. And so there have been some updates over the weekend. And unless you actually read through all of them to begin with, you didn't realize that there were updates, because they're not actually saying when they've made minor changes to an update. Specifically, one of them that was brought to our attention by Jamie Roberts is that businesses opening had to have hand sanitizer at the beginning, you know, at the door of every business for customers coming in. They have rescinded that requirement because people apparently are not able to get hand sanitizer at that level, or, you know, all of the necessary PPE. So I would expect to see continued modifications of things as the business community responds to whether or not they're able to comply in a variety of different ways, or whether things make sense. Anyway, just my recommendation to anybody, if they have questions, is to go to the COVID-19.alaska.gov website and read whatever the most recent iteration of those mandates is, to get the latest and breaking, to the best of our knowledge, news right there. And our Reopen Wrangell Task Force will continue to be working on this. Assemblymember DeLong, it was my understanding that perhaps there was a follow-up meeting today?
Yes, that's correct. We were able to go over the survey that we put out to businesses and get a better grasp on where the task force can channel their energies and resources. So we did have a meeting today.
Great, thank you for that. So it was very interesting to hear just early responses to the business survey that went out. And there are a number of businesses that are not opening for a variety of concerns, but once we've got some more responses to that in the next couple of days, and the task force follows up with us, we will get that information out to the assembly for sure. But they are going great guns, working with the business community, trying to get as much information as possible so that we can assist them. Another part of Mandate 16 that came out with the reopen was an extension of one of the other mandates for the continued requirement of a 14-day quarantine for people coming into the state of Alaska. So that has been extended until May 16th. So that effectively delays small cruise ship traffic for another couple of weeks. Where things will go after that, I don't know the answer, but they are continuing the 14-day quarantine requirement. The other thing that was done is that the allowance of groups to get together has changed from 10 to 20. That still does not make it large enough for cruise ships to come into or to have their people on board, because almost every ship coming to the state, even the small ones, has far greater population than 20 and on board just in terms of crew in many instances. However, it is likely that that is going to change. And so internally we are watching that. Assemblymember Decker emailed me today asking for the assembly to have a conversation about that. It has been on the forefront of the mayor's mind, and I know it's on the forefront of our chief medical officer's mind at Search. And so I have reached out to her and hope to have an offline conversation to make sure that we're clear about her concerns and that we can all address this together. So just rest assured, assembly, we're working on this and we will be back to you with additional information as things progress here shortly. I'm sorry, give me just a moment to look at my list here of things to discuss. We previously, the borough had requested that three different seasonal workforce groups hold off at least until May 1st with plans to bring any seasonal groups into town. Those included the U.S. Forest Service, Sea Level Seafoods, and the Crossings Program. We have been working with Sea Level Seafoods. They submitted a draft plan to the borough and to the state. We got back with them with comments, and they are working on those things right now, and we'll be submitting a revised plan to the borough and to the state as well, is my assumption. So we're working with them on them bringing their workforce in. They are doing their best to hire locally, but we don't know what those numbers look like right now. But we will be continuing to have ongoing conversations with them. Secondly, I reached out to the U.S. Forest Service and the Crossings Program again, because we said we would revisit that May 1 date on April 15th. April 15th has come and gone. The U.S. Forest Service has rescinded all offers of employment to folks outside of the state of Alaska, and will be working within their allowable guidelines to hire locally, not only local individuals, but also local contractors to make up that work rather than bringing people in to do it. In my conversation, just brief interaction on via email with Mark Walker, the Crossings Program right now is planning to reopen as of July 1. I don't know what that looks like in terms of numbers, full numbers of staff and potential clients coming into the community and through the community. I've asked for that information, and we'll be reporting back so that we have an idea of what that means in terms of additional population into the community. Last week, I sent out an email to the assembly and to the staff providing information on the amount of CARES funding that the city and borough of Wrangell is anticipating to get, and that is $3.84 million. Initially, we were told that the policymakers were doing everything they could to make sure that we would be able to use that money to backfill for lost revenue associated with impacts from COVID-19. That is not the case. Let me repeat, that is not the case. So we will have to use the money for COVID-19 related issues. And the likelihood that we will be able to use $3.8 million, I don't have any idea. Right now, the Office of Management and Budget at the state level is working on guidance for the municipalities as to what you can use that money for. My understanding is that it can be used to, let me back up, the Family First Coronavirus Act allows for, and FEMA will allow for you to get reimbursement for additional wages of staff having to be paid for coronavirus work. My understanding through the CARES Act is that you may use that to pay for regular wages that is that are being used by staff for coronavirus work. So we're trying to figure out all those things. It's also my understanding that we may be able to use coronavirus CARES Act funding to offset for wages of people that might have had to have been laid off due to a reduction in revenue, because part of CARES Act guidance is related to being able to retain jobs. So there are many other things we might, I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor, go ahead.
Sorry, Lisa, I just want to catch, Julie had a question that I just don't want to get wrong before she gets a chance to ask. It's, I don't know if it's in this wheelhouse or your previous one. So
okay, sorry about that.
Go ahead, Julie.
No, it's actually once you get done with your CARES thing, then I'll ask the question.
Perfect. Thank you.
Sure. So I'm going to try to pull this up here just quickly. I received guidance. I actually got a copy of the federal guidance today from our lobbyist, but thankfully last week I had received a copy of this from the city manager in Seldovia through the city manager in Kenai. So there's a network of managers moving stuff around to make sure that everybody's getting what they need. But the CARES Act says that payments from this fund may only be used to cover costs that, one, are necessary expenditures incurred due to the public health emergency with respect to the coronavirus disease 2019, were not accounted for in the budget most recently approved as of March 27th, 2020 for the state or government, and were incurred during the period that begins on March 1st, 2020 and ends on December 30, 2020. So taking those things, it seems as if we may be eligible to incur costs against CARES funding in our FY21 budget, because what is in place right now at the time that the act was created on March 27th is our FY20 budget. Again, lots of nuances. The other thing that I want to be clear about is this money has to be spent by the end of December. So we need to have discussions about how we may want to use this once we get guidance from OMB. About what it can be used for. I will, as staff, be bringing that some recommendations to you, but then there are other things that we may want to talk about expending the money on to assist the community. So I'll just leave it at that right now. Currently, I just don't know where we're going with this, but what I do know is that it cannot be used to backfill for lost revenue, unfortunately. So, what the governor indicated when he made cuts to the budget for a school bond debt reimbursement and not backfilling to make the community assistance, formerly revenue sharing payments, whole was inaccurate. My understanding is that he was working off of inaccurate information that he received, but interestingly enough, the legislature had concerns when he made those cuts, suggesting that he would be able to backfill everybody with even additional money from the CARES Act. So please stay tuned.
Assemblymember Decker.
Thanks. So Lisa, two questions. What you just read with the December date, did it say for costs incurred by that time, or that the funds have to be expended by that time?
It says costs incurred.
So if I remember right, in some of the material that you sent us, the funds aren't all supposed to transfer to us all at once. It wasn't like spread over like three periods or something?
That's correct. It's a phased thing. And how exactly those will be rolled out yet, I don't know. I believe that's part of the guidance coming from OMB. There were lots of questions the last call, AML call I was on regarding this.
Okay. And then is there I am just like flabbergasted that the idea that the funds can't be used to backfill for things like sales taxes and things like that, that we're not going to be receiving because of the actions taken, just seem totally incredible to me. That's the whole point of this. Is there a way that, you know, all the municipalities can push back against this or question this or challenge it? Or do we need to go to our congressional delegation and point to, because I think they did a lot of things that they didn't know how they were going to roll out. And now they're going back and sort of fixing and those things. And this might be one of those things.
That question was asked on the last meeting I attended, and the response was, it is very unlikely that this is going to be rolled back and changed at the federal level. I certainly think we can reach out to our delegation and see. I specifically asked the question too, because they said OMB at the state level is the one that's going to come down with the guidance. But the issue is that the enforcement comes from the federal side. And so I said, okay, so OMB is going to tell us what's okay, and then they're going to go back up to the federal level and make sure everything's okay at the federal level. And the response I got was, nope, the money's been given to the state. They just need to make sure that it's okay giving it to us. I am concerned about that again, because the enforcement is coming through from the federal side, not from the state. And the response was, look, if the state gives us guidance and how to spend that money, then the feds would take that up with the state. That's the assumption. But that doesn't make me feel better about someone coming and stripping, you know, $1 million out of our bank account if we, you know, misuse those funds, even if the state said it was okay. So I'm going to be looking for some assurances to provide to you guys in how we spend this money. In response to your comment about it being a fairly ridiculous concept that we can't use that money to backfill for lost revenue. It's interesting because that's how the money is doled out. The first set of money is related to community assistance. That's the normal per capita community assistance payment that municipalities would get. But then the additional money that is coming out to communities seems to be based on a loss of tax revenue, whether it's sales tax revenue, CPV revenue, bed tax revenue, those sorts of things. And I was at first sort of astonished at what appeared to be discrepancies in the list. And, you know, Valdez is not much higher on the list than Wrangell. And so I look across and I see Wrangell's getting $3.84 million, but Valdez, that has almost twice the population, is getting only 1.7. And I'm thinking, well, how is that possible? Well, that's because all Valdez was getting is the community assistance payment. They weren't getting any loss of tax revenue because they don't have any sales tax or any of and they have very little CPV. All of theirs is property tax related. So they're not losing any of that. So it's interesting that that's how the money was rolled out, was for loss of revenue, but we can't use it for that.
I think, Lisa, from the Fed standpoint, there's been some fairly high profile comments about states utilizing these funds to assist for the lost revenue, issues with pensions, and so on. And there's sort of a underlying current of tension that's party related. And the House has come out and said that they are pushing for funds to be available for communities at the local level. But how that all plays out, I don't know. But definitely there's been some very high profile statements about funds should not be used for anything but direct related costs. And there's some states in a real pickle because they have pension costs that are mounting and they have decreased ability to fund those things. So they're trying to look at ways to creatively be able to use bailout money to help with those things. And there's a fairly strong voice against those. So I hope we're able to speak up for some of these losses and use Fed dollars for sure.
I certainly hope so too, because that amount of money would mostly make us whole for losses in revenue, not totally, but mostly over the course of one fiscal year. If the impacts, which they likely will, span more than a fiscal year, then it won't make us whole, but it gets us most of the way there. Any other questions, Mr. Mayor, from other members of the assembly related to that?
Not seeing any hands. I think you're good to move on, Lisa. Julie, did you want to follow up at all? No. Okay, thank you.
As I mentioned last Thursday at our briefing, the Fisheries Working Group had a meeting, and thanks to Assemblymember Gilbert, we at the end of that meeting, the decision was made, rather than move forward with an ordinance as I had proposed, to make an addition to the Marine Yard User Agreement. And although I wasn't able to get that done in time for the packet on Friday, I did work yesterday and today on putting together what I'm calling proposed Section 8 to the Marine Yard User Agreement. And I emailed that out to the staff and assembly members that were on that user group call as a first review group. I did that this afternoon. And then once I get comments and feedback from them, then it'll go out to the whole working group. It does, as was recommended by Assemblymember Decker in her proposed revisions to my ordinance, include many references to Mandate 17. So Mandate 17, which is the independent fishing vessel regulations, has Appendix 1, and Appendix 1 is essentially the meat of those mandates. And so there are many aspects of that that are referenced in what I provided. It's about a half a page long, and really the additions to it are nominal for Wrangell. They just are. So take a look at that. Those of you that I emailed it to the mayor, to Assemblymember Decker and Assemblymember Gilbert to review. And then once I get comments back from you and the staff, we can clean that up and hopefully get it out to the group. I did speak to the city manager from Hoonah, Dennis Gray, today, and they have opened their yard, but they are essentially on lockdown. Anybody coming into their yard must quarantine on their vessel. They have their yard completely fenced in with cameras. He said they're in jail, but everybody has agreed to that. But Hoon is in a different position, obviously, because they qualify as a small community. And in fact, their entire community is on lockdown, not just their harbor and their marine yard. But so anyway, that's what's going on in Hoonah and with our marine yard proposed additions. Mr. Mayor, one of the things I'm hearing most from just people around the community is that concerns is that many people are not wearing masks, not just general people going out and about, but many people in some of the businesses as well, especially in grocery stores and things and hardware stores. And I'm just hearing general concern that we have COVID fatigue, and as the reopen Alaska and reopen Wrangell takes place, people will become, the fear is that people will become increasingly not interested in additional health protections. And so one of the things that I know Petersburg did previously, and there's been mention about us considering here in Wrangell, is maybe doing a local mask mandate when people are out in public. I don't know if that's something that the assembly wants to consider, but I am hearing a lot of concerns about that. I did ask Captain Spray to run that up the chain through the State Emergency Operations Center and ask if that is a local mandate that we would be allowed to pass. She hasn't gotten a response yet, based on the last time I talked to her. So that may be something we run through Commissioner Crum, as he indicated, if there's a local mandate that you want to have, ask myself or the governor directly. So if we don't get an answer, I guess we can run it up that chain and see. But I would welcome any feedback from the assembly about a mask mandate locally.
Do you want that feedback now, or do you want to receive it offline?
I mean, this is a work session, so we could have a conversation about it. I also don't want to spring that on you and expect you to have an opinion now. So you certainly are welcome to, if you would like, respond via email to Kim. She can put all that stuff together and then get it to me as well, if you'd like.
Member DeLong actually has her hand up. Go ahead, Maya.
Yeah, I can speak on this now. It's actually something the task force has taken a look at, because as these new retail businesses are opening, the non-essentials and able to do business, one of the main things in the mandate is that the consumers need to be wearing masks. So for businesses that are reopening, they're kind of looking at other businesses that have been opened that don't have to follow these guidelines. So it's a little bit of, so we want to get everybody on the same page, and that with some of the retailers, and we talk about some signage like mask up, social distancing, and we're working on what these key points on the signage will be, and also working with the chamber to do a shop, love to shop local, but love to shop local wearing your mask. So these are just some kitschy things that we're trying to work on to normalize the unnormalization of having to wear masks in public, but you know, really giving leeway to these retail businesses that do want to open and abide by these guidelines, and to inform the consumer, if you want to shop with us, you're going to have to put the mask on. So that was something that we talked about today specifically. There are masks available still at our library. Our supply chain for that is heavy. And maybe this even plays into some of those funds we could get a hold of if we can, you know, start recording, you know, how much it costs for us to distribute these masks, or, you know, not inflate these costs, but show what these masks productions have the effect monetarily it's had on our community. That could be something we could reach out for funding or use it for. So the task force is aware that these businesses open up need to abide by it, and it is actually different from previous mandates where social distancing was fine, and now it's not. So we're trying to get it out there with or without an ordinance, I'm not sure, but at least getting the information out there that these retailers want to do business with you. They can only do that if you as a consumer follow the guidelines that the mandate puts in place, because you're putting that retailer at risk if you are not abiding by the mandate. So just wanted to add that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for clarifying that. That was an issue that came up last Friday with our EOC group as well. And the question went out from our local folks here to the state to confirm that under new mandates, the employees of these businesses that get to reopen must wear masks. But all these other businesses that are considered critical workforce that have been open all this time don't have to have masks. Is that correct? Is there going to be something that that brings the two into consistency with each other? And the response that was received was no. The folks that have been open under critical workforce don't have to have masks. The new people do have to have masks. So it's challenging for sure. And I applaud the businesses for chugging through all of this stuff.
For sure. Assembly Member Morrison, and then DeLong.
Just a comment. I don't know for sure if any of our restaurants are going to be opening to where they're serving in the restaurant. But there's another issue. How do you go to a restaurant and have a meal with a mask on?
You're not required to, and there's no requirement to wear a mask when you're eating. Like, they expect that, but the staff are expected to be.
Okay. That was just something I thought.
And that is case in point where some of these mandates are contradicting of each other. And I just want to rephrase, we're using the word mask, but cloth covering is now been updated in the new revisit to mandate 16 as well. So cloth covering is the new term.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mask-like cloth covering.
Perfect.
Lisa, you're up.
It's interesting to watch the iteration of things as we move through.
Sorry, Ann, do you still have another question?
No, go ahead.
Could you remove your little hand there? Little alien.
I'll turn it off.
Thank you. Go ahead, Lisa.
So I also wanted to let the assembly know that the harbor office is actually open and we will get notification out of that, but they have installed a safety plexiglass barrier across the desk. So the staff is protected in the office and can still transact business with people being in there. So I just wanted to update the assembly on that. The pictures I saw look great. And the other thing that actually Assembly Member Decker brought to my attention today in an email is our shelter in place order. I did pull that up and there is nothing in it right now that is out of line with what the state still has in place. Other than asking non-essential businesses to close, we certainly can revisit this. The other issue, I guess I would say, is the line item that talks about don't panic, buy or hoard never did become an issue. But the hunker down and the shelter in place order for the state is still in place. They have not reversed that, although they have issued mandates along with attachments to Mandate 16 that talk about recreating and going to other communities and things like that. So my guess is that that will be reversed shortly. So I will work on a review of this and then probably an update of the shelter in place order for the assembly. And I think, Mr. Mayor, I think that's all I have this evening.
Does anybody have any further questions for the city manager? Okay, thanks very much. We have a regular assembly meeting tomorrow at 6 p.m. and we'll all be back on Zoom at that point. Thank you. Oh, sorry, Assembly Member Decker.
Yeah, I just, for folks' information, I just want to let you know that Wednesday at 10 a.m., United Fishermen of Alaska is hosting a free webinar for folks that have questions about Health Mandate 17 and want to ask questions actually of the state. There's going to be four people from the state online, Tom Kowalski and several others. And so, you know, if there are sort of anything that's unclear, those kind of questions can be aired. And I think even just listening would be helpful to hear everyone else's questions and kind of get the straight scoop. So you do have to register ahead of time and the information is on Facebook and I can send it to the clerk to distribute as well.
And I did send that out to the assembly when it first came through my email.
Thanks.
Okay, good. I thought I saw that, but I wasn't sure.
Any other questions or comments before we sign off? Okay. Seeing none, we will adjourn at 6:04. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.